Hello and welcome to the Board Game Barbecue Podcast. It is Mitch. I will be your host today, and we are brought to you episode 271 by our sponsors Advent Games and our amazing Patreons. So I've got a couple of other hosts with me here today that we're going to share with you some of our recent board gaming shenanigans that we've been getting into. First of all, we've got a person who's becoming a little bit of a piece of the furniture around here these days. I think she's been on about four episodes in a row. It's Dana. How you doing?
Hello. Good, thank you. How are you?
Not too bad. And the other one we have is the guy who was, I think we found him in a peat bog somewhere. He was about 3,000 years old. It's Dan, down in Melbourne. How are you?
I've never met Pete Bog before. I don't know what you've heard, but he and I have never met. Hey, guys, how you going?
Ah, dear. That was the only thing I could think of. It was that old.
No, I knew it was coming. I just waited to just brace myself for it. I think I got off lightly, that one.
Yeah, fair enough. I'm a bit tired today, so my jokes are going to be even worse than usual.
Possible.
So with that, how's everyone been playing games lately? I've kind of been a little bit, had a little bit of a downturn in terms of games coming in, but I've actually played a few more games, recently that I think I've played sort of other times. It's been relatively busy.
I've had a few games arrive on Kickstarter the last few weeks, and I held off playing them knowing that you were going to play them as well, so I wanted to either hear what they were like, or alternatively, I was going to try and quickly play them so that we could discuss them together.
But I know what are some of those titles?
Well, I know that this was on the Kickstarter, but we both got given copies of Ticket to Ride Legacy.
Yep,
from our fabulous friends at VR.
Yeah.
And I thought I'll quickly see if I can break that out and play a few games, because I know that's your oath, and I was assuming that you were going to get it to the table, we could discuss it. Mm-hmm. I got Tiny Epic Crimes that arrived a couple of weeks ago, and I know that you were keen to break that out. So that one I haven't played. And then I think pretty much most of the people in the team all got 20 strong as well, which Jules talked about last week. So
yeah,
I did not get it. What's going on?
Well, Jules didn't get it either because he said it wasn't that good.
He did get it. He talked about it on the last podcast.
Yeah, but he didn't get it.
I did listen to that podcast, but did he mention the funky smell?
No, he didn't.
I don't think he did.
I don't think it's that bad. Maybe I've got a nose problem, but I think everyone's overreacting a little bit, to be honest.
Dana has a penchant for the box smell, the smell of a new game. And wow.
I will not be
getting that. When I broke the seal on this baby, whew. It was like a chemical fuel smell.
Oh, so that constitutes as bad, Mitch.
Well, it depends what side of the tracks you're from, I guess. Some people enjoy that.
Well, I wasn't huffing it. I didn't put it in a plastic bag and take it down to the train station, if that's what you're asking.
While we're talking about a stinky 20 strong, I need to clear things up, because Jules did talk about it on the pod last week, but he didn't really – I don't think he enunciated enough the fact that he only got the base volume, which is 20 strong.
Sentinels?
The Sentinels, yes, which is the one that's the unique IP, the new IP set in space or whatever. And I don't think he really sort of highlighted the fact that it actually comes with, if you get the full lot of them, you can get Victorum, which is out of the Hoplomachus universe, and you can also get the Too Many Bones version as well. So, you know, there's more to it than just two-thirds more than just the part that Jules has played and talked about. So I haven't played to the Too Many Bones one yet. I've been waiting for the right time, but I have played the Sentinels and the Victorian one. I enjoyed them immensely. I'm finding them difficult. Like, I see a lot of people, and even Jules was like, oh, I played the first one and I got through and I beat the big boss at the end. And I'm like, really? You played two games and you've already beat the big boss? Like, I think I'm finding a lot harder in terms of challenge than a lot of people.
That doesn't surprise me, Mitch.
No, it's like your Arc Nova, Dana.
Touché.
Yeah, nice return serve there.
Yeah, pew. But see, to me, I think that's a good thing anyway. For me, it's a good thing because you know, I'll play a couple of games, lose, and then I'm motivated to continue playing. I think if I beat it too easy, then I kind of get turned off a little bit. But yeah,
I got it out and I had a look at the components and went, oh, this is really nice. And I started reading through the rules and went, yeah, this is pretty great. I just didn't get it to the table. But it was funny because when the way Jules was explaining it, I was driving to work listening to his explanation of 20 Strong. And the way he was describing it, I kept thinking to myself, oh, it sounds very similar and I'd probably rather be playing Doom Machine. And then no sooner did I think that, Jules goes, I'd kind of rather be playing Doom Machine. Yeah. But I went, oh, snap. But I still do want to check it out for myself.
Yeah, I didn't really – I have Doom Machine. I've only played it a couple of times when I first got it. I don't really remember it that well because I just haven't played it that many times. But I didn't get that. That may be because I've forgotten Doom Machine.
Yeah.
So I didn't make the connection. But I sort of, yeah, didn't get it. Someone said to me, oh, you know, I looked at it and I was thinking it was – reminded me a lot of the One Deck Dungeon, if you guys have played that. Which is kind of a dice-based sort of thing. Now, I've played that, and I can see some very, very sort of small comparisons, but I think the 20 Strong really sort of ratchets it up a level in terms of there's a bit more going on. There's more to get involved in. There's a little bit more interest, different things you can focus on, different ways to manage your strategy and stuff.
Yeah. Did the different versions, like you said that there was one from the Hoplomachus IP or whatever. Does that make a big difference to the game?
I think it does, yeah, because, well, I played the Sentinels one and I think I got sort of reasonably close to taking on the bad guy, the big boss or whatever, before I died. In Hoplomachus, I played like three turns and I was dead. It seemed so much harder. I remember riding to death and going, oh, my God, this is super hard because it adds into it different mechanics. Like you don't get your full dice pool. Half of your dice or a portion of your dice at the start of the game are in what they call the training grounds. So part of what you're trying to do as well as roll your dice and defeat the bad guys is use abilities to get dice out of the training grounds so that you can have more dice to use. So it does add more dimensions to the game. And I think Too Many Bones is going to add its own dimensions. I haven't played it yet, but I flicked through the rule book and sort of had a little look at how it sort of sets up, and I think it'll be different again. So I like what they've done with it in that respect, playing, even though they're three different games, it's not just three different paints of coat.
I respect anyone who can create a gaming system that they can then in subsequent games modules just tweak and add and subtract. And, yeah, it's just, you know, it's just that is well done.
Yeah. Well, I hadn't actually intended to talk about 20 Strong on the pod today because Jules did cover it off last episode. So we won't harbour the point too much. But what do they say? What's the belabour the point too much? But, Dan, what other than 20 Strong have you been playing?
Well, I played my completed my oath. It's easy for me to say. Just put my teeth back in. There we go. I completed my oath. So Monolith, I thought I'd talk about that briefly rather than sort of doing it at the end of the episode. Monolith is another Phil Walker Harding game, one of the many Phil Walker Harding games. Thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it. And this is a 3D spatial puzzle. I'm going to say right out the gate, I actually prefer this to My Shelfie, which My Shelfie in itself is a great game. Very similar sort of context in terms of you've got about three different objectives that is all pulling and pushing you in different directions. But the way Monolith works is everyone has a 4x4 grid on a plan, if you like, in front of them. And there's five different colors of blocks that are available for everyone to use. And each side of your plan has only four colors. And then you've got a 4x4 grid. And then there's the table in the middle where all the different bonuses go. And, for instance, the first person to complete a full level of their 4x4 monolith takes the highest value chip. The next person takes the second value chip. Similar to a lot of other Phil Walker Harding games, similar to Baron Park, similar to My Shelfie, there's that sort of group objective. First person to mark it, to tick that off gets the higher objective. All of the pieces, though, they stay in the box, and you put 13 around the outside of this board for everyone to access. And the way you when you take a piece, it works like patchwork. So where there's a little crystal, and you can take one of the first four clockwise around the table, any one of those pieces, and then you move the crystal to that spot that you've now made vacant, and you replace where the crystal was with a brand new piece. So that's constantly being refreshed, but you can only take one of four pieces in advance of that crystal, and you're placing it on your little plan to slowly build it up. And with four players, I think you only go as high as three, so you're making a 4x4x3 monolith for two players, or for one, you go up to four, level four. The interesting thing, though, is later in the game, if the pieces aren't of any use to you, you can take a piece and then discard it and take a single one by one in its place to help kind of plug those holes if you get yourself in a bit of a pickle. But the real fun part of this is there's also around the board, there's these what they call prophecies. And so it's almost like a wager that you're going to complete one face, one side of your monolith of that particular color that I mentioned before was on that plan to a number that's equal to or more. So if you want to say, if there's a 10, you can put the 10 on your green side and you're going to wager by the time the game is over, you're going to have 10 green blocks on that face, on that right. side of your monolith. You could go as high as 12, or if you're playing just two players, you could take the 16. But that means you have to have every single tile that's every single block on that side of your monolith of that particular color. And if you do achieve that, then it's worth 16 points at the end. And those bonuses do really come in handy. But that, but you're taking one of those predictions, one of those prophecies in lieu of taking a piece as well. So you got to get the timing right and then try and get those big points before anyone else. So that's really, really cool in terms of another scoring objective. And then the last one is, There is a group objective for everyone that sits in the middle of the board, and it's I think it's called a structure. It's called a structure, and it might be that there's one called the towers, and it might be that every tile on every block on your monolith must be at least a level one or a level two, and the corners must be level three. And so the first person to achieve that structure can take the highest one. It might be worth 12 points. The second person might be worth
12. So it's like a race to that goal.
For that. But but you know, it's very, very rare that you can achieve all of those and in perfect synergy. Sometimes you have to forego that structure so that you can get this over here and maybe, I can't get that, but I'm going to go for these two. So even though everyone's kind of doing the same thing, you are sort of looking at different objectives and there's a bit of a – those objectives are all pushing and pulling you in different directions, much like the bonuses in Baron Park. Or, you know, the Baron, like with Baron Park, you might have to, you get a bonus if you're the first person to complete your little park, your little 4x4 park, and then you put the bear in the middle. But there's also another objective, you can get three polar bear enclosures all next to each other. So you can't get necessarily get three polar bear enclosures in the one grid. So you've got to bleed into the second park, which means you're not completing the first one. You're not getting that first 16-point bonus. So really, really clever. I think the spatial side of it where you're actually building up in a 3D has great, great appeal. And I played it twice with Jen. I played it once with myself as a solo. The solo, it works really well because you put all of the prophecies around the outside. And every time you take a block and place it, you remove the highest objective. And so those all those objectives basically work as your countdown clock. That's the ticking clock in terms of once they all run out, you're stopping. And so you can actually take some prophecies instead of taking blocks, but then you've got to sort of find that balance. But then I taught my boys as well. So that means Jack's 8, Ollie's turning 5 soon. They really enjoyed it too. I didn't use the structure bonus in the middle. We just used the prophecies and the levels. First person to make the first level gets the highest. But they really, really enjoyed it too. And they picked it up pretty quickly in terms of the spatial puzzliness of it. So
yeah, right.
I think it's a good game for families too.
Is it difficult completing like the sides? Because I'm looking at – I'd never heard of this game, so I just quickly looked it up on BGG. And the 3D pieces are, you know, sometimes there's corners on them and things like that.
They're literally Tetris-y pieces.
Yeah.
So the thing with the prophecies is if you want to go, okay, I'm going to go 16 – and I'm going to get 16 black blocks all on the right-hand side of my monolith. Well, that means that the top face and the bottom face, you're not going to get any more than 12 because effectively you've taken one column with black blocks for that face. So they kind of work in a sort of opposing forces, if you like. So you have to try and sort of work out how you can – it's very difficult to get – successful prophecies on all four faces of your monolith. And The great thing is because there are five different colors, you'll have four prophecies, but there'll be a color that is of no value to you if you're picking it up, and it won't actually improve your prophecy at all. And everyone's color that's missing is different on the plan that you set down and start building your monolith on. So, look, it's no surprise it's a Phil Walker hunting game that is actually clever, but it's also quite refined in terms of there's not too much going on, but there's just enough of these core sort of mechanisms to really get you thinking. And if you want to play a simple game with your kids and your family, you can, but if you want to really get into the crunch of it, that's available to you as well.
Well, Phil is the master of, you know, simple gameplay but deep sort of strategy, yeah, isn't he?
Absolutely. Yeah. So shout out to Mike who got me onto this one, because Gumnut, who have their pop-up shop at our Melbourne Game Days, they had this on sale.
Right.
And I think they put three out there, and Mike said, look, there's only one left. Do yourself a favour. Grab it. It's one of my favourite Phil Walker hunting games. So shout out to you, Mike.
That's a big credit, because Mike loves Phil Walker hunting games.
Yes.
Like, it's not like he's got one or two of them. He's mad for him, which is good. So, yeah, if it's being endorsed by Mike at that level, then, yeah, you know, it's going to be good.
Yep. And I may have another Phil Walker hunting game to talk about a little bit later on as well.
Yeah, maybe not. No.
Well, you get final edit, so, yeah, we'll see whether it makes a cut.
We'll see if it makes a cut. How about you, Dana? What's been bouncing around your gaming table?
Well, I'm very one-dimensional this week. I've been on a couple of podcasts like in a row, and I keep doing this thing where I make these really difficult oaths to complete. And I said that I would do the Lost Ruins of Arnak, the second expansion, the campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't even actually, when I said that, I didn't even look at what it was involved at all. I just said it. So there are actually like six full games in there, and there's only 7 days between one podcast and another. So I really struggled in this occasion. But I don't know whether you'll give me credit, but I did do 5 out of the 6 chapters. I've got one to go.
That's pretty good. Most people would say yes, and I probably would too, but
Dan will say yes.
Oh, please. I've got more unfulfilled oaths than anyone on this podcast, I think.
I think 5 out of 6 gets you there.
But, yeah. So this was the second expansion, and it's called The Missing Expedition, and it's published by Czech Games Edition. And this is actually, it reminds me a bit like Revive, where you can do a campaign and get introduced to the new expansion parts
bit by bit,
slowly. Great. Or you can just shuffle everything into the game and just use it, and there's a rule book to show you how to use the new components.
Hmm.
So I am not one for solo gaming at all. It's just not me. But I thought, bugger it, I'm going to do it because I love this game. I don't have people to play it with me, so I'm just going to do it. So I actually did the campaign. Now, I don't know, people don't know Lost Ruins of Arnak. Maybe people are living in a cave or something. I don't know. But, but anyway, you're an archaeologist and you're discovering sites
Dan was born in it. Dan was born in a cave.
Oh, I thought it was a dump. I thought I heard it was a dumpster.
I've been to Arnak.
Yeah. When it was a civilization.
It wasn't even in ruins when I was there.
But so you're an archaeologist and you're discovering like this uninhabited island, and you've uncovered like an old civilization, and you're trying to dig up sites to get all the relics and whatnot. And this is a game that does remind me of Indiana Jones. It's got that kind of vibe about it. It hasn't got the time pressure like some of the other games that sort of say they're like Indiana Jones, but I still like it. And it's sort of a deck building and worker placement mixed together. And so with this expansion, you get, now I'm telling you this is stuff that you can see on the back of the box. I'm not ruining anything. Like I'm not going into the campaign at all, but I'm just telling you what's in the box really. But this expansion gives you two new characters. So in the first expansion, you got six characters. Then this gives you another two. So, and one's a journalist, which is actually very thematic, the way that you write articles and then you use those written articles to give you bonuses. And then there's a mechanic as well, and it's got a really nifty wheel that your cards, your action cards that you get, allow you to turn this little wheel. So that's pretty thematic as well, and I enjoyed both of those. Now, the campaign is only a solo campaign or cooperative with two players. You can't play it with any more than that.
Or competitive. You can't play it competitive.
Well, if you just – no. If you just – sorry, I should say that. I'll rephrase. The solo campaign is competitive. It's competitive against an AI, but then you've got the cooperative campaign, which is cooperative together against the AI, if that makes sense.
Yep.
And anyway, so it's a little bit limited, I guess, in that regard that you can't play it with four players. But I played it both. I played it solo and I just played it on my own but with two players. And there's a little feature in the campaign for two players. What I liked about this expansion, and I will say straight up, it's very, very good. It's excellent. The story writing in it is very good. Sometimes I'm a bit wary of games that are not necessarily produced or designed by people who are not native English speaking. You know, sometimes the text is a bit off. You can just tell it's a bit off. Very well written or well edited anyway. So it's very well done. There's different difficulty levels as well that when you play, they give you like a student mode or a hard mode, which is called the Arnacologist, I think it's called. You can make it a little bit harder on yourself, which I thought was very good. So you get a bunch of new cards, new idols and new assistants as well. There's two new temple boards. So, you know, the research track on the right-hand side, a double-sided board that you can just place over the top. That is one thing that I really like about this expansion, because that's probably the main complaint about the game, the base game, is that you have to go up the research track to win. You can't not do that. So this changes things up a bit, which I really like. Also, it's also fits inside the base box, which is hallelujah.
Good.
Everything fits inside the base box. And it's got these really interesting cards called encounter cards in it. That is part of the campaign, and they're basically cards that will give you some interesting choices, but you can also add them into the game. Like, as if you just wanted to play the game normally, there's variants that they've given you so that you can add that into the game to change it up a little bit. And so everything from this expansion can be used with the base game. And I just really love that. And all the chapters that I've played can all be played individually again. And I could see how you could do that, because they're quite challenging. So I just
it's not a case of like the story is such that you wouldn't play the game because you already know the story.
I think you could play it without the story. Yes. Okay. I would play it quite happily without the story. But the encounter cards for me, the encounter cards were a real highlight. I thought that was a great addition. And I just thought the fact that it's completely replayable, fits in the box, to me, it's the perfect expansion for this type of game. So I highly recommend it. And I'm looking forward to the next one when I can get it done.
Yeah, right.
But, yeah, it's great.
Have you played with the other expansion, the first expansion that came out?
I have, which is
the Hidden Leaders or something.
Yeah, it's just is it called Hidden Leaders or Expedition Leaders or I can't remember what it's called. Yep. Something. Anyway, and yes, it gives you six new characters and some new cards. So yes, and I think it does make it a better game. With the, Oh, it just changes things up a bit. But I do like the different research track. That is a great addition as well. Yeah, so really enjoyed it. Fantastic. Cool.
So that's the Lost Ruins of Arnak, the Missing Expedition.
Yep.
Cool. Well, I'm going to, you know how, Dan, I've got a bit of a reputation for going rogue on the podcast and not clearing any of my decisions that I make with anybody.
Mm-hmm.
That's because I think I'm the heavyweight of the group. I weigh more than anybody else, so I can do as I like. And what I'm going to do...
We're all just terrified of you, Mitch. That's what comes down to you.
Well, yeah. I've worked hard for that reputation. I'm pretty sure Kenny said I'm the most intimidating or something. Anyway, let's move on. We're getting sidetracked. The reason I'm going rogue here is because I'm going to go with Tide for first place this week, two games as my sizzle.
Okay.
Yeah. So I don't know how Jules is going to work that out with his poster, but I'm doing a double sizzle because there's two games here that I can't split. Yep. And the first one I'm going to talk about is a game called Sleeping Gods Primeval Peril.
Nice.
Okay, so for those of you who maybe aren't familiar with the Sleeping Gods universe, there was a game brought out a year or two ago called Sleeping Gods. It's sort of like a narrative-based adventure exploration game. And then they released they started a campaign, a crowdfunding campaign on GameFound about a year to 18 months ago for their second edition or expansion, standalone expansion called Sleeping Gods Distant Skies. Mm-hmm. And whilst the designer, Ryan Lockett, was in lockdown and we all were in through COVID, he designed a print and play smaller version of Sleeping Gods whilst he was designing Distant Skies called Primeval Peril. And this came out during COVID as a print and play, and it was pretty popular and people, you know, enjoyed it. So he decided to make it as a little expansion that would come out with, it was available to get if you backed Distant Skies. And I did. So recently that turned up at my doorstep and I had to give it a crack. And my perspective on the game is that it's exactly what you would think it would be, in that it's basically a mini version of Sleeping Gods. It's a mini version, cut down, streamlined, light, less rules, less overhead, less components, less characters, less everything, but the same game in a smaller package. So you're playing the game rather than moving your way across a massive book and, you know, hundreds and hundreds of different possibilities of different things that you can go and visit. It's a lot smaller. You're traveling down a river system. So there's some different ways you can go. There's branching routes that you can take with your boat to give you a little bit of variability and different things to see and do and different exploration. It's not as boring as just going, well, there's the river, let's sail down it. Cool. But it gives you the exact same feelings as what I got out of Sleeping Gods, just at a smaller level. You have your number of different characters that all have their own sort of little abilities. You utilize them on each of your turn. You've got it. The characters anyone who hasn't played Sleeping Gods are kind of like resources because they've all got sort of different strengths. So when you're choosing to do a challenge or a skill check or something, you'll choose which characters you're going to use to defeat that challenge or to succeed at that skill check. But then that character might become exhausted or they've only got a certain amount of effort they can put into doing the challenges. So you're spending each character like a resource in order to achieve the things that you're doing. It's just really good. I really enjoyed it. It played in about 2 hours maybe. I was kind of doing some other things in between, so taking a turn here and then coming back to it and going away. But I just thought, this is great. It's a Sleeping Gods game. It's everything I get out of Sleeping Gods, but in a small sort of amount of space on the table that I can carry around in a small bag, and with reasonably not much overhead set up and everything. So I thought it was tops.
So is the game self-contained? Do you need to have any components from the base game to be able to play Primeval Peril?
No, it's totally standalone. Totally standalone. So if you wanted to, I was actually talking to Manny about it because he was sort of saying he was interested in having a go at Sleeping Gods. And I said, look, if that's you, if you're out there thinking, oh, that game always intrigued me, this is the perfect way to go, give me a taste of this game and I'll decide if I want more.
Mm.
It's a great intro in that it's going to teach you how to play. It'll teach you the basic sort of mechanisms. It'll teach you, you know, give you that comfort level of understanding the system in a smaller package that you can sort of jump into, have a game, play for a few hours and then get out.
Does it replace it? Oh, sorry, you go.
Sorry, Dana. No, I was just going to quickly ask how many characters for Primeval, because the base one has 8, doesn't it, that you're going to control all of them?
Yes. I think from memory might be 9, because in Primeval Peril, it's 5.
Okay.
But there's always one character, the captain, who...
There's always one.
And it's the same in Sleeping Gods. The captain... So if you're playing multiplayer game, you will take 2 of the characters and the other player will take, say, 2 of the characters. And then the fifth one, you both use that character on your turn.
Right.
So you'll control 3 on your turn, be it your 2 and the captain. But you can also, you're not necessarily out of the game either when it's the other person's turn, because if it's their turn and they're facing a challenge or whatever, you can contribute, you can assist. You can help out with their challenges with your 2 characters. So there is that, you know, integrated cooperation element in the game as well if you play multiplayer. That said, I've never done that because I honestly think it plays so well solo. Like when you hear, oh, I've got to control 5 characters, it's really not like that. It's not like you're taking 5 separate turns for 5 separate characters. You're taking 1 turn, your own turn. And in that turn, you have the ability to utilize all 5 of those characters, aka resources, during your turn.
I don't know how you do it, because I was playing the Lost Ruins of Arnak campaign and it's only 2 players.
Yeah.
And I could not remember whose turn it was. It was bloody hopeless. And
I think
it was terrible.
I think solo gaming must be only for people who can win Ark Nova, maybe.
Yep. Okay. Yeah. Maybe. I was waiting for it. Does this replace Sleeping Gods for you?
Absolutely not. And that brings me to a good point, Dana. Thank you for bringing that up, because there is one concern that I have with it, is that because you've got your little river system and you travel around, for example, I did that and, you know, in my game I made it through and I made it to the point where I wanted to for the conclusion of the story. And that was great. I didn't win. I lost at the end. So, you know, I'd have to play it again to win. But I did go, oh, well, now I know where that thing is that I was looking for, which is the destination. And there's not as much in the book, because it is a smaller version, there's not as much in there really to be able to go, I forget where that was again, and I'll have to go find it. So... once you've kind of played it through and gone, right, I found where that particular destination was for this story, it's going to be there again. So I just wonder how many times are you going to be able to play the game? Like it's funny, when I was talking to Manny about this, I said I don't know how much replayability is that there is there, because if I sort of already know where that destination point is now. So if I play again and want to go there, I'll just go straight there. I didn't even contemplate the fact that, oh, I didn't win. I'd have to play it again to win. That's just how my brain works. I enjoyed the game, win or not. Winning doesn't matter to me at all. So there would be people out there, I guess, who would be like, oh, no, I definitely will have to replay that because I didn't win. So I'll have to play again to win. I'll play and play and play until I beat the game. So from that aspect, yes, I think there's probably going to be some replayability. But for me, I think I've probably got 3 or 4 games in me. For this game, and then I'll be looking to either move it on or those three or four games will be really good.
Yeah. Would you be looking at playing it again and taking some of the paths that you didn't take the first time around? Just to open all the doors and see what's behind everything? And
absolutely, 100%. 100%. And there's the way that the system works in this particular game, like in Sleeping Gods, I'm pretty sure from memory, if you go to a particular node or destination and you can either choose to run away or you fail that particular challenge, that you can always loop back there at some point later and do it again. Whereas in Primeval Peril, if you fail that challenge, you cross that off and you can't visit that location again.
Because you're literally just going down a river, so that's you can't go back upstream.
Well, you can actually move around whatever you in terms of that, but the rules say you can't visit the location again. So if you go in and you're exploring a cave and something happens and you want to see, there's a challenge or a skill check in order to receive whatever reward might be available there or whatever challenge appears, and you fail, you take the damage, you cross that location off and you move on. You can't come back there again. So it's unless you're like the luckiest guy or you play perfectly, you're going to have nodes that you don't uncover in every game. So that's why I say three or four times, maybe you'll go back, you'll replay, you'll go the different routes that you didn't take the first time, or you'll go to the routes that you failed last time and didn't get the outcome from to see what happens there. That's the way you'll get the replayability out of it. But even that said, I don't know if there's enough there to really make it an all-time fave that I'm going to play 100 times. Def would burn this out in about 3 days probably.
It's a perfect game for me because I can't remember what I did yesterday. So it would be a completely new game for me.
New experience.
Every time.
You'd walk in every day and go, oh, yeah. Did I buy this game?
Yeah, that's it.
Oh, dear. So that's my first one, Sleeping God's Primeval Peril. I won't hog the limelight and go straight onto my next one. Ooh. I'll throw to Dan if you're ready to go on to talking about something else.
Yeah, I'm champing at the bit to talk about this one, and I want to make sure I do it justice because it's probably one of my most memorable gaming experiences that I've had this year. And you might remember that earlier in the year I started exploring some solo RPG, but it was a map drawing, and I sizzled Delve earlier in the year, and I made an oath to play A Quiet Year, which, speaking of unfulfilled oaths, that was one of them. Oh, by the by, I was chatting with someone in Discord way back in, maybe in around June, about my exploration into these sort of dungeoning, sort of solo, map drawing games. And I was having a chat with someone someone in our Discord about that. And you know who it was? It was bloody Lauren.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. Okay.
So Lauren's a big fan.
What a coincidence.
I know. I went back through some of those conversations and went, oh, it's Lauren. So I don't know if Lauren's played this one, but I picked this one up at South by Southwest. So Games Paradise were there. And they had a whole range of solo RPG style games. And while I'm on that, I need to actually make an apology to Games Paradise as well and our friends at Games Paradise, particularly Greeny, because a couple weeks ago I talked about Forbidden Jungle and I incorrectly attributed that to a different distributor. We actually got our copy of Forbidden Jungle from Greeny and Games Paradise and their associate supplier Ventura Games. So a big thank you to Games Paradise and Ventura Games for our copy of Forbidden Jungle. They were one of the only people that actually had it at PAX, so we were very lucky to get it in the first place. So apologies, Greeny. I would never burn you like that, you know that. But anyway, Games Paradise had a copy of Thousand-Year-Old Vampire, which is a game that I was aware of back in earlier this year when I was looking into these solo RPG-style games. And you can buy a copy of it. You can buy a PDF version of it, and this was the first time I'd actually seen a copy of the actual book, and the book itself is magnificent. The way it's been produced, it looks like an old school library book. It feels like there's like coffee cup stains on some of the pages, and it comes with a couple of ribbons for bookmarking, and some of the pages look like they've got other photos sticky taped on top of them, and it's like been thrown together like a journal. But Thousand-Year-Old Vampire is a solo RPG journaling game. And in it, you play the role of a vampire, and through a series of prompts throughout the book, you end up creating you create a life of for this vampire, starting with your origins, who you were before you got turned into a vampire. You give yourself a couple of skills at the start, so you can create whatever skills you want depending on what kind of character. So I created a street urchin in the streets of London, So I had pickpocketing skills. I had confidence. I can't remember what the other skill was. I could bring up my Word document because I documented it all in there. You create a couple of characters, some mortal characters that you add into your journal as well, so people that you know. And then you create an immortal character who is the vampire that initially turned you. And what the way the journal works is you're creating these experiences. You start off with creating five experiences based on those things I just explained. And then you go through a series of prompts through the book by rolling a D10 and a D6. And you subtract the result from the D6 from the D10. And that's how many prompts you move along in the book. And each page has three different prompts. So if you start at one and then you roll, let's say you end up moving four spaces, you have to move four along. So you go to prompt number five and it will ask you a question or a prompt. And so you have to answer that and your response becomes an experience. And you add an experience to one of the five memories that you have. And you're allowed to have up to five experiences within a memory. And sometimes it might ask you to do what I call a skill check, which is refer to one of the skills that you gave yourself at the start and respond to that prompt in the way that you're actually using that skill. And then you cross that skill and you don't have it anymore. Sometimes you may actually be given a new skill, but it asks a question and the prompt might be someone discovers who you are and so you have to kill them. How do you do it without getting get away with it and then add bloodlust as a skill? And that might actually come back around later on. It might be a prompt like someone who you know, one of your mortal friends, betrays you. What do they do and how do you react? And so you end up putting that little – and you can put a sentence, you can put a paragraph, you can be as elaborate as you want, but you're creating this story based on these prompts. So there's so many little things that go with this because you are a vampire, so you are immortal, and so the passage of time really plays into this story. This narrative that you're creating to the point where every time you get a prompt, every time you create an experience, your mortal characters, they have almost like a countdown from five to four, and then you have another experience, their countdown goes down to three. Once it reaches zero, they die because you're immortal. So people that you know in your life end up dying and you live on. Except for the mortal characters. Now, I had a couple of prompts where someone who I knew from a previous generation, if you like, came back. And so I had to explain through the narrative, what are you doing here? How did you find me? Because sometimes you'll get forced to leave town or leave the village or relocate or something like that. And the other thing that really plays on you is because you're limited to only having five experiences within each of the five memories, once it fills up and you have to add another experience, you have to choose one whole memory to wipe clean. And so you lose all those experiences from your memory, which is handy because that's pretty much what happens just in a day-to-day life for me anyway. So all these experiences that you're having, you forget as you get older and older. And the experience I had with writing this story, like it really played into the fact that, you know, I love sort of writing as a side hobby, but I can just pick a few little notes out from, actually, I'll just jump a few props. So there's one prompt here, prompt number 16. Some mortals have banded together to hunt you. Well-armed and wise to your tricks. How do you defeat or evade them? Create a mortal hunter related to one of your checked skills. So you actually have to create a new character who's in your life all of a sudden, and they're like a hunter. And then so now they're going to be around for the next sort of five or six prompts. And so because when you roll the dice, if you advance through the book to the next prompt or a couple of prompts later, some of the earlier prompts that you've responded to actually come back to haunt you or to affect you or to do certain things. Now, alternatively, you might roll with the D10, you might happen to roll a 2 and then your D6, you roll a 6. That's technically a negative 4. So you can go backwards in the book as well. And if you do go back to a previous prompt, if it's one you haven't done, then you just action it as if you would. You write your experience down. If it's one you've already done, you go to the second prompt because each page has actually three different prompts. In fact, if you end up using all three of those, the book itself comes with 80 prompts that you work through, but then there's appendixes with about 300 more prompts as well. So you're never going to run out. And every time you play this game, every time you create a story, the narrative, the story that you create is going to be completely different. It was such a trip. I really, really enjoyed this. And it's one of those things where I actually went into it thinking, oh, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. But the first couple of prompts took me in a completely different direction. So you kind of just got to give in to these prompts and just have no preconceived notions of what you're going to do and just go with it and see what happens. It was amazing.
It sounds actually, I'm really enjoying because people don't know, but I'm watching you on the screen as we're talking, and I love seeing your face when you're talking about this game.
Yeah.
Because you seem so happy, and I was thinking about the game itself, and I thought that seems like it would be really good to when you have a break from it, to go back and read over what you've written and that. Yes. And that must be really wonderful. Well,
to the point where there was one where I got to a point where all my memories were full and I had to actually move something out of a memory. And then I got hit with a prompt where I had to actually where you start with five memories and you're slowly filling them up with experiences. I suffered kind of like a loss to another immortal, and I had to erase an entire memory. And I'm like, oh, I'm just going to cut and paste it into a separate document because I don't want to lose what I've invested in. Yeah. But true to the story, it's like we're talking generations. So it's kind of like a loose rule of thumb is that each prompt should be at least 1 or 2 years apart from each other. So one prompt, the second prompt isn't like the next day after that prompt. It's almost like you're talking, because if you're talking about there's a mortal character in your life, in five prompts time, that character will be dead. Now, it might even be by your hand. It might be by someone else's or a death that you caused. So you're kind of talking almost like 15, 20-year gaps so that the people, that the friends you meet, the lovers you have, your best friends kind of pass you by because they're getting older and you're not as an immortal, and it's just fascinating. It was so good.
I got to say, Dan, playing a 1,000-year-old vampire, did it kind of bring you back memories from your childhood at all?
I'm only 990, so I've still got 10. I got a 10-year wiggle room, but I could definitely relate if that's what you're saying.
When I heard you were going to talk about this tonight, I thought, is that Dan's autobiography?
It could well be. I should be so. Actually, I don't think I could handle that because some of the stuff I went through, it was quite the ordeal. This guy. I had in mind that I was going to create a character that was started off in London and then jumped on the first fleet and came to Australia, but I soon found out that I got myself into a real pickle because if he's a vampire, he can only sort of be available at night, and so I made him a doctor where he worked in an enclosed tent like an infirmary, which then gave him access to convicts so he could eat them and actually he could do his feeding and then take them out. But then weird stuff kept happening to where I was getting chased out of town, and I was living in a cave at one point, and I was setting traps for wild animals so that I could still feed. And then I made a friend in a child that was sort of this, I had to create something for a child and confide and actually let them know. And then I ended up going to a farm and I was having an affair with the farmer's wife, and then I ended up killing him and turning her as well, so she was a companion for me for a while. And then we got hunted down, and it was an absolute trip, this whole narrative that I created just through these really clever prompts. Another thing is if at any time you're asked to do a skill check and you haven't got any skills left, and you're asked to give up a resource and you haven't got any resources left, then it's game over and you have to use that prompt to actually end the game, kill yourself, or have some sort of untimely demise. Otherwise, once you get to, there's a total of 80 prompts in the book. The last 10 from 71 to 80 are all some sort of untimely end, and you have to sort of work that into your story as well. But because you've got a lot of sort of carte blanche at the start to have whatever skills you want and whatever resources you want, you can have a castle as a resource. You could have, I went low key sort of lockpick tools, and I went a doctor's bag and some apothecary sort of medical books because that was what I had in my head. But then all the prompts took me down completely different paths and branches that I couldn't anticipate. And like I said, you just got to sort of just give yourself into these prompts and just see where the story takes you. It's weird hearing, you know, when you hear an author say, oh, I didn't know where the character was going to go. I just started writing. It's like that.
Yeah, right.
I don't know. Every time I get a prompt, it's like, wow, I wasn't expecting that. Now, and I was sort of taking breaks. Like I was going out and doing some gardening, thinking about what am I going to do about this next prompt? And then I come back. I think if you went and just worked at it solidly, it might be about 2 hours. I sort of did it over the course of a day and a bit because I wanted to. I wasn't writing sort of huge slabs, but I was trying to think of creative ways to get myself out of the sort of the corners that this book was sort of painting me into. But yeah, Thousand-Year-Old Vampires. The creator is Tim Hitchens. Now, strangely, Thousand-Year-Old Vampire isn't on BGG. But you can find it.
Because it's RPG, isn't it?
So I'll put a link in the show notes to where you can find it. I think he's got a couple other similar style ones out there. But the book itself, do yourself a favor, if you can get your hands on it, do that. If you're not fussed about the book, you can purchase the PDF from his website. It's great fun.
I'm a little bit disappointed I didn't jump on board and get it. I remember when you picked it up at South by Southwest when we were talking about it, and I was like, oh, should I? So if Greenie and Conan are out there still listening and you have stock left over, maybe drop me an email. All right, that's a Thousand-Year-Old Vampire. Mm. So Dan sizzled down, my first sizzled down, Dana.
Okay, I've got to make it quick because you obviously want to do a second sizzle.
My second sizzle will be relatively short, but you take all the time you need.
Well, speaking of losing games, I am going to talk about the new Ark Nova expansion.
Oh, I'm so good at the first one. I'll double down and get the expansion.
Ark, maybe she thought I need more content to help me get some points here.
That's right. There's no denying I'm rubbish at this game. I'm rubbish at it. But it's like golf. That's what I liken it to. You know when you play golf and you just have a shocker and you can't hit the ball or whatever, but then you get hit that ball and it hits the sweet spot and you just want it again. Mm-hmm. That's what Ark Nova is for me. But, I mean, look, I'm rubbish at it. But anyway, I still enjoy it. So the expansion to Ark Nova is called Marine Worlds by Capstone Games, and I'm doing expansions both today, but I'm up front. It's a very, very good expansion. It's great. Really, really good. So for those who don't know, it's a zoo building game and you're putting animals in your zoo and you're trying to be the most successful zoo. So the expansion adds, first of all, it adds some new animals, and they're obviously marine animals. So you can put these animals, these go into aquariums. So there's a new special building that you can build called an aquarium, and it has to be built next to a water space, and that's where these marine animals go. And the new animals have some really interesting abilities or things that you can do at the end. Like, for example, it might let you play, if you're playing a second animal, you can play that second animal, but you can ignore one of the conditions on there to play that animal. So that's really handy. Or the other thing that you can do with these marine animals, about half of them are reef dwellers. And reef dwellers are really cool because when you play a reef dweller, it'll give you something. Normally it might give you 3 money or something like that, or it might give you money for how many cross tokens you have, something like that. But then if you play a second reef dweller or a third reef dweller, you get to activate all your other reef dwellers again. Isn't that cool? That's so cool. I love it.
It's engine building, isn't it?
Well, I guess so, but it's just so cool.
It's reef building, so cool. Mitch.
It's reef building. It's like in the coral, all the little animals are helping each other out. It's really great.
Can you play the toxic mining waste card and get rid of the other people's reefs?
Oh, God, stop ruining it for me.
I play the bleach coral card.
Oh, God. Anyway.
Sorry. Dana's never going to want to do this with us again, Dan.
And these cards also have a wave icon on them. So when you refresh the market, because this was a common complaint.
That's my wave icon.
Jesus. Yeah. I thought you were trying to tell me that what, I was doing something. What podcast
listener doesn't love a visual gag?
Yeah, exactly. For all those people listening at home, yeah, I was waving.
Oh, sorry. Oh, God, you're throwing me off. Anyway, there's a wave icon. Stop it.
Mitch won, Dana nil.
God, it's like being in kindergarten. Anyway, so it's got a wave icon on it. So when you refresh the market, there was a common complaint of the base game is that you can't get through the market quickly enough. There's so many cards and you can never find the card you want. So this, if you get a card with a wave icon into the market, it pushes the market along one space. So you're getting rid of that last card. And then if you draw out another one, that pushes it along and again. So it's very thematic when I think about it. It's actually really, really clever.
But it sounds like that, because I think that was a criticism of the base game to a degree, wasn't it, that there were so many cards that it was hard to get.
Yeah, there's a lot of cards. And, of course, they've added more. But,
It sounds like they've taken that feedback on board and added a mechanic to try and help you get through them a bit. Is that the case?
Yes, and there's a lot of thought that has gone into this expansion. Another complaint is that some of the cards, for example, have three Africa icons that you have to meet or you have to have in your zoo before you can play this animal. And lo and behold, you just can't find a bloody, you know, you can't find a herbivore or you can't find some, you can't find the card. Well, now there's new universities which, A, give you a research icon but also give you another icon, and it could be a reptile icon or a bird icon. You can pick which one you want out of the market, but it also allows you to search through the deck for that particular icon. So you just draw from the deck one at a time until you get a card with that icon on it.
Yeah,
and so that just helps move the game along as well, so that you're not stuck in the water trying to get the right cards.
Just grinding, trying to get through cards, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The other thing that it gives you, this is another thing I love, is cute little animal tokens, little wooden tokens. So there's like little penguins and, I don't know, a meerkat or something like that. So it replaces all the tokens as well. New bonus tiles. The bonus tiles are very good, like giving you the ability to change your final scoring card, because some of them are worse than others. And actually, even better, the new expansion replaces some of the cards and actually rebalances them, so that some of them were quite hard to get. So it's they've done a good job at doing that as well. But some of the new bonus tiles will let you take back an association worker, which is very handy because you always find you never have enough of them. And this is probably my favorite part of this expansion, the new upgraded action cards. So as you know, there's five action cards. Well, what you do at the start of the game is you go into a draft and you get three cards in your hand, pick one, pass your hand on to the next person, pick another one, do it again, and pick your last card. So you're going to get three cards in your hand. Then you can pick two. They become your new, let's say, for example, you choose an upgraded build card and an upgraded animal card. They replace the ones from the base game now, and they become your new cards in your hand that you can use. And they are really, really good. They make the game really interesting. For example, the sponsor card will give you extra money if you do certain things. The animal card, once again, will let you play animals by ignoring certain icons so that you can play your animals faster. And it's really, really good. It's great.
Is that a way of giving the game a bit of a more of a jump start because it's already adding all these other things into it?
Absolutely. It's really good. And look, I don't want to get people's hopes up that this is suddenly a quick game. That's not the case. That's not the case. This is, to me, in my view, and I've played a few times, but I would say that this game is best at two or three. I don't think it's good at more than that, because I just think it's too long. But it certainly helps with that. And I'd like to just let everyone know, the first time I played this expansion, I lost by quite a bit.
I don't think anyone's surprised by that.
And the lady that I played and the lady that I played hadn't played for a year. It was so embarrassing. It's terrible. God, but I keep being drawn back to this game. I don't care. I love it. And so it's certainly worth getting. I would definitely get it, and you shouldn't play without it. It's very easy to integrate. It's essential in my view.
So that's Ark Nova Marine Worlds. All right. Interesting. All right. So I said I was going to do a second sizzle on the show, and you know that I'm a bit crazy and I don't like to stick to the normal conformities of society. So I've changed my mind. I'm not going to do a second sizzle. I'm going to say that everybody out there that's listening is going to have to wait now and find out next time I'm on the pod what the mysterious second sizzle is.
Keeping us in suspenders.
It also might have something to do with the fact that we're right about the time that we decide to move on to our next segment. So we're going to do that right now and move into our news.
You know that game you've been wanting for a long, long time? The one that's been on your wish list for ages? Yeah, that one. The one you've been adding to your cart and taking off again, umming and ahhing about whether you should get it or not? Well, I'm here to push you over the edge and say go to adventgames.com and add that to your cart right now. I bet you that Dean has a great price on it, he's got great customer service, flat rate shipping, and there's so many other goodies to explore on the website. Wonderful categories all organized to pick the exact game that's right for you and the group that you play with. So head over now, don't hesitate, to adventgames.com.au and add that game to your cart now.
So the news and the announcements that we have this week is that we are going to mention it again, PlayCon. The tickets have gone on sale. It's our three-day convention that's coming up next year in July of 2024. We've been on sale now for about a week and a half. Is that right? It's not that long. It'll
be 2 weeks by the time this comes to air.
By the time this lands, it'll be two weeks.
Yeah, almost 2 weeks.
We've sold 40% of all of our tickets already.
That's amazing.
So it's just mental how many tickets we've sold. But if you want to get along, like I know we say this a lot, but if you want to get along and you don't want to miss out, you got to buy your tickets now. Don't wait. I know it's a long way out. It's not until July. But if we continue on this trajectory in terms of selling out tickets, it's not going to be a long time before there's just none left. Mm. So if it's something you're interested in, jump onto the website, play-con.com, grab a ticket now.
By the by, what a great Christmas present for someone that you love.
Tickets to PlayCon.
I'm actually more excited about this than my overseas holiday coming up. actually the family are just really irritated by that. But I am so excited about PlayCon. I can't wait. Well,
it depends where your overseas holidays too.
Well, it's Vietnam and Cambodia.
Oh, right. That's still pretty good.
pretty good.
Yeah. The other things I want to mention while we're talking about PlayCon is a couple of our sponsors. So the first one being More Than Meeples, which is they also do our pop-up stores in Brisbane. Sig and Christian have been awesome. They're top blokes, really good customer service. If you need any games, if you're looking for a game, they also do a lot of Kickstarter stuff. I've noticed that. They'll do a lot of the Kickstarter edition packages and stuff that they get through, pledges and things that they get. So if you're ever on the hunt for a game, check out More Than Meeples.
I was just on their website today actually looking for some Christmas presents for family. They got a lot of great stock.
Yeah, right, they do. Mm. If I'm ever like looking for something that I can't find anywhere, like at my local that I can just walk down and pick up or whatever, I'm like, they'll have it. Yeah. I'll check them out there. Yeah. So it's More Than Meeples. Check them out. We also want to mention another great sponsor of Board and Dice. So Board and Dice is a publisher from the US. They're well known for hobby and expert games, including their T line of games such as Teotihuacan, Tekkenu, Tiletum. Is that how you say that one? Tiletum? Tiletum?
Tiletum.
Tiletum.
Mm-hmm.
Tiletum.
Tiletum. You just got to put the right. It's just where it just depends where what we put the emphasis on the syllable.
They've also published lighter games that have interesting themes, closely tied with mechanisms in books like Time and Barcelona. Apart from that, they also specialize in escape room games like Escape Tales or an upcoming series they have called Side Quest. So check out Board and Dice as well for their awesome range of games. Other announcements we have is, as always, we're still doing game day. So the next one will be the Sydney game day, which is on December 9th. That's not too far away now, only a couple of weeks. And that's at the Castle Hill RSL, as always, from 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. Tickets are on sale on Eventbrite. Check those out. And the Brisbane game day on the 30th of December. This is the crazy, silly, long, mental one, which goes from 10 a.m. until 2 a.m. the following day on New Year's Eve at the Westside HQ in Corinda. So tickets also available there on Eventbrite. Get out and grab your tickets now before you miss out and get along and catch us all there. I'm also going to throw it out there, Dan, that the Sydney game day coming up on December 9th, there's a good possibility that will be the last Sydney game day before PlayCon.
Right.
Because we've got a lot of stuff going on in the new year leading up to, and I'm not sure if we're going to get another game day in.
Well, that's a good incentive for anyone who hasn't been to a Sydney game day to get along, get your feet wet, sort of check out what it's all about, because PlayCon is going to be just like a Sydney game day, only about 20 times bigger and even much more fun with more things to do.
Yep. So if you need a fix and you don't think you can wait from now until July, then Sydney game day on December 9th might be your only chance. Mm. All right. So we'll take a breath. And we'll move on to our question of the pod. So our question of the pod from last week was, I think this is yours, Dana, right? You came up with this one. You've been a bit Santa and Christmassy sort of influence lately.
No, I think it was Adrian that came up with this.
Oh, really? Yeah. I thought it was too good for Adrian.
yeah.
So the question is, if you could only get one game from Santa for Christmas this year, what would it be? So, Dan, do you want to read through a couple of the responses? Should we do our own first?
Well, it's funny because I've already sort of precursored this one. So there was a game so what we do at home is I usually get the boys a game each for Christmas, but we also get a family game, and we've started a new tradition where we open the family game on Christmas Eve and we play it before we go to bed. Mm-hmm. And there was a game that I saw at Essen that I wanted to get. It's called Oh No Volcano, and it stands almost vertical, and you've got these little mountain climbers that climb up, and then you almost like pachinko or plinko where you put a boulder and it falls down. You try and knock it down. I've been trying to get it. It's not available in Australia. It's available in the US, and it's ridiculously expensive to get it shipped over here. Yeah. But then I did a bit more digging. It's a Phil Walker Harding game.
Oh, serious?
So no wonder it's so appealing. But so if I could get any one game from Santa this year, it would be that. But unfortunately, I'm just going to have to wait till it hits Australian retail next year.
Hmm. How about you, Dana? What's Santa going to have in his sack for you?
Well, oh, God. I did answer this question last week, but I'm pretty sure there was a naked Christmas card of Tom Basil.
Oh, that's right.
A naked Christmas card of Tom Basil, or a Christmas card with naked Tom Basil.
Or even just like one of those, you know, those singing Christmas cards who turns up at the door or something. I don't know. That would be pretty cool. Oh, God.
Oh, dear.
So that would be one. And
some things you can't unsee.
And the other thing was Come Sail Away, a game that Lauren taught. And, yes, that's right. So that appeals to me.
Fair enough. Well, I got to say, I don't know if I would actually had one. When I was listening to the podcast last week, I was thinking, I'm not sure. Because I pretty much just, if I really want a game, I go and buy it, and because I'm impatient. So I don't know if there is a game that I've been waiting on. But after tonight, I'm going to say 1,000-year-old vampire.
Oh, I thought you'd say that.
Yeah, I'm going to put that on the list. So there you go, Santa.
I would lend it to you, except that I want to revisit it and play it a couple more times. So
that's all good. On your own. That's fine. All right, so Dan, do you want to take us through some of the responses we've had from the community?
So on Facebook, Ingrid Wright said she's had her eyes on gins even before Dana talked about it, but she'll probably try it first. If it's as good as Crown of Amara, she'll be happy.
You talked about Crown of Amara and gins, didn't you, Dana?
Yeah, they're from the same designer. Yeah. So
Ingrid might be a bit of a bandwagon jumper.
she did say before Dana talked about it, but
Sure, Ingrid.
We'll go to the video referee on that call.
Yeah.
James Belingle. G'day, James. Hope you're well. We caught up with James at Five Guys and had dinner during PAX together, him and his daughter. Nucleum, he said, not arriving in Oz till January, unfortunately. Brenda Lutz said riffraff and Niet. You'd be happy with that one, Mitch.
Oh, yeah. Love my Niet.
And Dale Ware said he would be delighted to get apiary. I appreciate a good pun. That wasn't one of them, Dale, but good on you for getting apiary out there. I'll quickly do Discord as well. Damo said Nippon. So Santa, get your elves into gear and make it happen. Let's Dive In said, if I could only get one board game gift this year and money was no object, I think my top two games might be between Icky, another one that Dana's talked about. Mm. This one's been on his personal radar for a while and he's so surprised that no one talks about it. Oh, Dana did last week.
That's
or
it.
Or Distilled.
Yeah. That's it.
And Raina said he wants the KDM collection painted. So not asking for much, is he?
No.
He wants the KDM, but swing it past Jules' house first. Get Jules to paint it all for me and then drop it down my chimney.
Sounds good. Dana, do you want to do his Twitter and Instagram?
From Twitter, Luke Venables. If I could be guaranteed to get it to the table, then probably Food Chain Magnate or the Great Zimbabwe. Ooh. Otherwise, Ahoy from Leader Games. Then Rex Devlin says, unrealistic. This is an unrealistic option, but an older edition of El Grande. Realistic option is 12-chip trick.
12-chip trick? That sounds like trick-taking, and I haven't heard of that. I just looked that up.
Tell your Food Chain Magnate, that's pretty expensive on Kickstarter at the moment.
Oh, it's insane.
Yeah. It's about $500.
it's about $500 more than I'd pay for that game.
On Instagram, Drunken Dwarf Games says, how about instead of a game, a gaming table? But really I would probably say Darwin's Journey or Ticket to Ride Legacy. Board Game Sensei 23, Great Wall from Awaken Realms. Cool. Our board game table says probably Lacrimosa. And Board Gamer Tanara's Adventures, or is that how you pronounce that, or is it Tanares?
I think it's Tanares.
Tanares, I think you got it right the first time.
Yeah, Tanara's Adventures Ultimate Edition.
All right. So there's some awesome entries there, and there's some and there's Food Chain Magnate as well. So we'll move on to the next question of the pod for this episode, and that's going to be what other hobbies do you have outside of board gaming? So we kind of came up with this thinking it'd be interesting to hear from our community and to hear and just to see a wide range of different things that people are into. You know, we all share the board game hobby as one thing, but what are some of our uniqueness that we have that we don't share necessarily with everybody? So we thought we'd put it out there. So what about you, Dana? What's a hobby of yours that's not board game related?
That's really interesting. I actually forgot to think about an answer to this question. I'd probably say photography.
Yeah, right. Okay.
I quite enjoy photography. I've been on quite a few. I've been lucky enough to go overseas quite a few bits. So I like landscape photography and, mm-hmm. and things like that. So I'd probably say photography for me.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
Jules is into photography a bit as well, I think.
Yeah,
he's brilliant. Yeah. He's great.
Hey, take it easy.
Yeah, sorry.
Big enough head as it is.
Too much. Okay.
Dano.
I touched on it earlier, so I've always dabbled in writing, which is probably why 1,000-Year-Old Vampire appealed so much to me. It's something I want to get back into. I got a friend I work with who this month has been doing NaNoWriMo, which is the National Novel Writing Month.
Okay.
He'd aimed to try and get you're trying to write 2,000 words a day, and by the end of November, you've written 60,000 words.
Yeah,
something right. that I tried probably about 10 years ago, and it forced me to dig out, or didn't force me, it reminded me, and I dug out what I wrote about 10 years ago, and it was absolute trash. But I reckon there's some nuggets in there that I want to revisit. So it's something that, if you can call it a hobby, I've always enjoyed writing, and it's something that I will be getting back to hopefully in the next year or two.
Yeah, I don't think I could think 2,000 words a day, let alone write them. Mm-hmm. It's just how my brain doesn't work.
It's a challenge.
My hobby, I'm going to try and do something different because I think most people now would know that I would say basketball because I kind of live, breathe, and eat and sleep that. But I'm going to pass on that and say playing guitar.
Yeah.
I don't mind a little bit of playing guitar. It's quite cathartic, I find it, to pull out my acoustic and sit down and strum a few tunes. And
what's your favorite tune? Groove along.
Oh, darn it, don't do that to me. There's no such. It's like asking me to pick my favorite Spurs player.
is there an artist who there's a catalog of songs that you like playing?
There's a couple. There's definitely a few. I'll say a band called Sublime. I don't know if any of you guys have heard of Sublime or are familiar with Sublime, but they were around in the sort of mid to late 90s. The lead singer overdosed on drugs and passed away, but they're kind of like a reggae blues sort of ska infusion type thing.
All right.
And I won't go into the detail, but they have their new band or the iteration of the band now that Bradley died is called Sublime with Rome. They have a new singer called Rome Ramirez. So I don't think a lot of people have ever heard Sublime with Rome, but I actually really enjoy their music as well. So that's me, my hobby. So that's that. But, you know, as we always say, it's not about us. It's about the community. So jump onto our Facebooks or our Discord or our Instagram and find the post about the question of the pod asking what other hobbies do you have outside of board gaming and let us know. I'm really interested to see what
people out there in our community have shared interests as well outside of board gaming. You might actually find that's something that you're into that many others in our community are into as well. So that's awesome.
Hmm. Cool. All right. So we'll move on to our next segment. But before we do, I just want to do our regular shout out to our community, starting with some of our Patreons, Luella Moore, Manny M, Steve Miller. Is it Steve Miller? Is in the Steve Miller band?
Yes. Maybe. That's who it is. Yes.
Could be. Pretty sure it is. Yeah, that was Top of the Pops when you were about 40, wasn't it? Yeah. And Helen. So thank you to you for especially this episode for supporting us via Patreon. But of course, if you are unable or don't wish to support us via Patreon, there are other ways you can support us by primarily listening to the podcast and telling your friends, share this information with your friends, let people know about the hobby and get it all out there. You can also jump onto our Facebook community, which is Board Game Barbecue Community, or our Discord server where there's always a conversation going on and a great bunch of people there, including, for those Patreons out there, the Patreon Jackbox Party Christmas edition that's coming up, I think, on next Saturday.
Yeah, Saturday the 2nd, Saturday is that right?
Saturday the 2nd, is that right? I think it is. Yes. Let me just quickly check the calendar.
Yep.
Yep. So if you want to be a part of that, jump on and get into the Patreon. Leave us a review on all the podcast apps and all that fluffy stuff. Any new ones, Dan, that you can read out for us?
No, nothing, no new reviews to speak of, but it's worth mentioning as well that all our Patreons will be getting the 12 Pods of Christmas. We've been doing that for the last couple of years, and we are doing it again. We've already got a couple of them in the bank, and we'll be recording a couple more. In fact, three of us are going to do one right after this.
No, that can't be true, Dan, because they're recorded on the 12 Days of Christmas.
Oh, yes, that's right. Well, they're released on the 12 Days of Christmas. Let's just say that.
No, they're not.
No. We get together every day and record one in the 12 days leading up to Christmas, and so you guys get to hear us crap on about things that are not board game related, just for a change, in the lead up to Christmas.
Yep. All right. So let's move on to Swear an Oath. So the swearing of the oath section, it's kind of going to be a little bit flat this time around, isn't it? Because Dan's done his.
I've done mine.
Talked about it in his. Mm. And Dana's done hers because she talked about hers. Did you want to just touch on those again for us, just to remind us?
No, not really. What your oaths were? Not really.
Awesome.
Nah. Yeah.
Hey, Dan, just make a note. Vote Dana out at the next tribal council, all right? So I'll throw to you first then, Dana, to put you on the spot. What's your next oath going to be?
My next oath, I'm going back on the Vladimir Suchi train, and because I just got evacuation delivered. So hopefully by the time I come back from Vietnam and Cambodia, I would have had a chance to play Evacuation. So I promised to play Evacuation.
Oh, I thought you were struggling to remember your name there.
No, no, I wasn't. I couldn't think of a word. Sorry.
Is it something that travels, Evacuation, or is it a big
box? No, I'm going to play it. I'll play it when I get back, but or beforehand, one or the other. But yeah. So I'll get there.
I think if you're going over to Cambodia and Vietnam, the only evacuation you'll be having is a bowel evacuation.
I thought that, but I wasn't going there, Dan. I thought we're more classy than that. We won't drop that in there, but yeah.
Be fine. I've had my rabies vaccine. I'll be perfectly all right.
How about you, Dan? What's your next oath?
I'm going to triple down. This could potentially be the last oath for the year, because I think the next time we're going to be all together, we'll be talking about our top tens. But I'm going to pick up some of the missed oaths during the year. So Too Many Bones, Riffle, Sleeping Gods, and The Quiet Year. I'm going to revisit those and make sure I get them done before the end of 2023.
Wow, that's a big one. All right, so I guess that leaves me. And my oath was to play Ticket to Ride Legends of the West. And I can't talk about it because otherwise it would spoil it for everyone. So
that's it. That's very interesting.
No, I'll actually go there. I'm not going to do any spoilers, but I did play it. So I played it with my wife and my daughter because they're both big Ticket to Ride fans and I thought they'd really get into it. And we've played four games so far, and we played four games back-to-back on the one night. So I was quite impressed with that because I thought they're not the type of people that are going to be like, yeah, let's play again. But they did. And I think one thing, as I said, I'm not going to go into a lot of detail with any spoilers or anything like that, but one thing that I think they do really well is each game is not as long, at least at the start, is not as long as your typical standard Ticket to Ride game. So it's kind of like, so you can smash out four games in a reasonably short amount of time because the games are pretty snappy. You sort of get the setup done, you go bang, 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 you start playing, everyone's sort of churning through it, and okay, we're done. You know, we're down to two trains, so that's the end of that game. You tally up your scores, you do the end of the game phase or whatever, you do the start of the next phase, and you start again. So it's pretty good like that. So yeah, it didn't feel like we'd just smashed through four games. It felt like it was kind of a lot smoother.
How does it work in terms of the competitiveness? Because I've only ever played a legacy games like Pandemic where it's cooperative, you win or you lose, same as Aeon's End. Whereas Ticket to Ride, you're playing competitively.
Yep.
So
yep,
how does it, without obviously without if there's spoilers I don't want to know, but
yeah,
how does that change from game to game?
Well, one thing that I'll say is because it's not a spoiler, it's something you learn very straight up front in the first part of the game, every person has a what they call a vault, and certain things will go into your vault and you can't open your vault. So once something goes into your vault, stays in there, it gets locked away. So and one of the things that goes into your vault is your score of each game. So at the end of each game, you tally up your scores, you do your scores, you work out who the winner was or whatever. There's some things that happen based on whether you're the winner or the loser. Mm-hmm. And your score, you write your score down on a score ticket, that goes into your vault. So I'm assuming, we haven't made it that far yet, obviously, but I'm assuming once you get to the end of your 12 games, you'll open your vaults, tally all your score tickets.
Right.
And then that'll be your winner. But they put them into the vault because that then becomes, well, I won't remember.
Yep.
Who's scored what? I guess you could be a freak and remember it if you were that way inclined, but most people, you're not going to remember what the scores were and they're tucked away in the vault. So you're playing along and you're not really sure necessarily who's in front, who's behind, whatever else. So, yeah, they do that pretty well, I think.
Sounds good. Mm.
So, yeah, really enjoying it. And they even said, I was even like, did you want to try and we'll do this again? We'll have another night. We'll play four because there's 12 games. So I thought if we can do that three times.
Yep.
Play four games three times, that's the 12 done. So, and they were like, yep, awesome. It was great. I mean, so they enjoyed it. And if those two enjoy it, that's a tick in my box. So yeah. I need to say thanks to VR Australia for sending us a copy of that. Yeah, it's been really, really good. If you're into Ticket to Ride, I would highly, highly, highly recommend it.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. And my next oath, I seriously have not even thought about what I would do until this second. As I sit here looking around, what I have on my table over here is 20 Strong, we talked about earlier in the episode,
mm-hmm.
and I have not played this one yet, which is Too Many Bones.
You haven't? I thought that would have been the first one you'd crack open for sure.
No, see, I don't want to like ruin the learning experience yep. on the best game. I'm like, I'll play the other ones first, so that I can get the hang of it,
save the best,
get
to
it
last.
Comfortable, and then save the one that I think I'm going to enjoy the most. Till I'm actually well versed with how to play it. So
that's surprisingly clever for someone like you. Hmm.
Yeah.
If bang, only this, bang. Return if only this wasn't a family show. Oh dear. So as much as I'd like to hang around with these two lovely people, that's going to bring us to the end of our show. So thanks heaps for coming along, Dan.
No, thank you. Appreciate it.
No worries.
I'll and, go back to my crypt now.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that's it. Yeah.
And yeah, Dana. Yep.
Whatever. All right.
Thanks, guys, and stay safe. And we'll talk to you again soon. Bye.
Bye.
Did you just give me the finger?